Hey, I want you to think about some of the stories that you have associated with you and your memories of riding your bicycle. The first time your parents took off the training wheels, when you learned how to ride with no hands, just riding your bike. Think about the places that you would go and how the whole world was open to you. Now, did you ever think of riding your bike across the country? Across the United States, from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, or the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, depending on where you live. Well, today's episode is the first episode of a three-part series about someone who rode their bike across the country. It's an upcoming memoir called Tour Stories from Besides the White Line, and the conversation will be with author and U.S. Navy Ensign Sean Morrison. So part one is going to focus on the foundation, about his home life, about his family life. And so Sean and his father, Randy, are going to have a conversation about that initial moment, those initial times when Sean let his family know and he rocked his foundation when he said, hey, I'm going to ride my bike across America. Now, I want you to get yourself ready because this is an absolutely interesting story, and you'll just see this coming of age that happens from this. So, let's go. And today on Voices, I am really excited about this. A friend of mine connected me to this story, and so now I have the opportunity to share this story with you. This is going to be the first of a three-part series about a memoir called Tour Stories from Beside the White Line. Now, this is with Sean Morrison. He rode his bike across the United States. Now, for me, I've ridden my bike in places, but never in my wildest dreams had I imagined riding my bike across the country. Like, it takes 5 hours to fly across the country, and that would have been too long of a bike ride for me. So, no person can introduce themselves better than themselves. So, Sean, welcome to the show. I'll let you give yourself a little introduction, and then we're going to introduce your guest as well.
Hey, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on the show. you know, I always like to have the opportunity to get to share my story, and in return, get to listen to other people's stories. So I appreciate the opportunity there.
And it's so exciting, yeah. Because when we talked about your story, it was just interesting that I was curious on like the perspectives of this, right? And the interesting thing about it was one of the first things I remember you telling me about was your family. So I was like, well, what did your family think? And so the thing that's really cool is today joining us is your dad, Randy. And so I'll actually, if you want to, you can introduce your dad a little bit. And then Randy, you obviously can take the floor and introduce yourself as well. So Sean, do you have anything you want to say about your dad before we allow your dad to introduce himself?
Yeah, of course I do. So I'm a Winthrop graduate. I majored in physical education. That's where my dad also went to school. And, you know, he birthed me something like 32 years ago. Oh, he did.
He contributed.
Yeah. It's weird kind of thing, man. You know, he made me something like 32 years ago, and he's been with me ever since. So.
Yep. That's me. I'm just Pop Dad. Love my son to death, and I support him like you wouldn't believe. It hadn't always been that way. Sometimes it's always been tough. This was one of those times when it was tough. And I had to be more of a father than I really wanted to be. I wanted to be a friend, and it was just not that time. And, you know, Sean will get to that in his story.
And, you know, the thing that's really interesting is just looking at my friends become fathers, looking at the fathers of the other people in my life. I can only imagine what you were thinking when your son said to you, hey, Dad, you know. And I'm paraphrasing because I have no idea how he said it. Hey, you know, I'm gonna ride my bike across the country. I'm like, what? And just imagining that. But we're gonna go into the details for that first in a little bit. So first, Sean, I think this is really, really important again, because your book is called Tour Stories from Beside the White Line. So The first thing that I have to ask, and the people would obviously want to know, who are you and why?
Yeah. So who I am now is a lot different than who I was then. And this tour had a lot to do with that change. Right now, I'm a naval officer, and I am also a race director for a race called the East Beast Challenge. It's a foot race, 4 miles, 4 beers, 12 donuts, but that's something completely different and a whole other story. who I was then, I had just graduated Winthrop University. I was working at a camp in the upstate of South Carolina for kids to come in. They'd spend about a week or two. I'd teach them some survival skills, some leadership skills, and then they'd be off on their way. And it was a really cool experience there. And what made me decide to ride my bicycle across America is, when people would ask me while I was riding, because everybody did, like, why are you doing this? You're this is crazy. It's a waste of time, some people would say. And I would say, I just watched too many documentaries and I got too inspired and, just kind of laugh it off and joke. But in my head, I was like, why am I doing this? Because it was even tough for me to understand in a lot of ways. But one of the main reasons that I think I did it, or that I know I did it, is because America, our culture, we don't really have any rites of passage into manhood. And, like, I watch a lot of Discovery Channel, and I know a lot of other cultures, they have very specific and deliberate times and challenges that these men or these boys have to go through in order to step into manhood. And I just wanted to set something like that up for myself.
And so, Randy, what are your thoughts on your son saying, this is the path that I'm going to become a man? Like, but before we talk about how he said it to you, what are your thoughts about, like, that sort of mentality, that what was the purpose of him doing it?
I thought he was smoking crack. I mean, I thought he was crazy. I mean, what would you think? And the first thing I asked him is, I said, and how you gonna pay for it? And, it was one of those deals where it was time for him to become a man. I knew that. He knew that. It was just a matter of, that's where when you become a leader of your own family, one thing you have to do is walk away and become that. You have to become that. You have to say, hey, let's cut the strings and let's be that. And that's what he did during this trip. And it was, I watched psychological growth in my son over this, period of time that you wouldn't believe.
And you know, the thing that's really interesting, and we're going to actually talk to two other people in two separate episodes. Obviously, we're going to talk more about your ride so we can understand that. And then there's going to be another personal side. But I think the thing that is really, really interesting about it is, tell me, what did you say to your dad when you're like, okay, I'm gonna ride? Because you have to tell someone, because you know your family would care. So what did you say? Like, set that up for people, because obviously when they read the memoir, they're gonna get that. But like, so people can feel it from you, what did you say?
Yeah, so it was actually the day that I graduated college, and we were at a graduation party. And so all the attention was on me. There was no way I could escape this. And everybody's like, so what are you gonna do now? And in my head, I'm like, come on, Sean, think of like a good answer that's not ride your bike across the U.S. like, I wanted to say anything but that. So I said, I'm going to work at a camp for a few months. I'm going to teach kids how to like become leaders and, some survival skills and stuff. It's going to be great. And then they said, and then what? And then I was like, and then I'm going to ride my bike across the U.S. And I'm sitting there, we're outside on the patio. Everything is kind of gets silent. And then I've never wanted a nacho to stab me in the mouth so bad. You know what I'm saying? It was like just the pit of my stomach dropped out. And I was like, here we go.
And so Randy, tell me what went through your mind? What feeling surged through you when you heard him say, yeah, I'm going to work in the woods and then I'm going to ride my bike? And it was like, you kind of mumble, I'm going to ride my bike across the country. So what was your thoughts?
Yeah. I said, we just spent 6 years getting you through school.
Hey, we don't need to mention 6 years. it's like a victory lap or two.
And I won't even go through all of the orthopedic bills and stuff that we did as a child and, you know, that type of thing. But Sean's always been his own person. And, you know, he's always lived by his own set of rules. I mean, you know, we're sitting, and I remember stories about, I mean, times when he comes running in the house with a snake cut off his head, said, "I'm gonna cook it and eat it for dinner." I mean, this kind of crap was standard. And so I was like, this is just another crazy idea that, you know, I said, fortunately, you know, he's got his degree now. He can go and teach school. I mean, that's what I had planned for him. The world had something else planned for him. I didn't care what that was. I just needed him to become that man that he is now. And good gosh, look at him.
And you know, the thing, I can only imagine. So, Sean, don't worry. It took me 5 years to finish college. So, amen. College is not a set time in finishing. There's no set time for finishing college. Don't ever let anyone make you feel that
That's
way.
The truth.
But you look at that, and I can, again, imagine sort of the mentality that would be necessary to do that. Because, you know, there's a lot of opinions about college. Is it worth going to? And what does it actually teach you? What skills does it give you? And so, you know, looking at that, the fact that you graduated college and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to do what I did there. Makes it
was probably an issue.
So that's part of the reason some dissent was caused between my dad and me is around college, you know, going through high school. He said, you're either going to join the military or you're going to go to college. So I tried to join the military, and I was running half Ironman triathlons at the time. And I go into the Marine office because I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to dig ditches and throw grenades and just be a grunt. And they said, you know, can you, from a standing position, drop to your knees on the tile floor? And I said, no, that would hurt. Like, and they said, yeah, your knees aren't good. Yeah. They said, okay, your knees aren't good enough to join the Marines. And I was like, all right, I guess that's out. And you know, now that I'm in the military, I understand it's not how they described it, right? They described it wrong, the duck walk or whatever. But so the Marines was out, and I decided to go to college, and I was good at being physical and learning about the body and athletics. So I went into kinesiology. And I moved from kinesiology to some psychology. I did some religion studies in there. And then I moved over to physical education at Anderson University. And then that program got canceled, which is part of the reason why it took me 6 years, because I had to go from Anderson to Winthrop. And so it kind of restarted. I've taken freaking anatomy and physiology 3 times, and I made, you know, an A every time. So
they just wanted to make sure it was AAA, right?
Yeah, AAA. That's what it is. That's what it is.
That you got it all the way. And so the thing that I find interesting is, and I just want to go back to sort of the college thing, is you graduated from college. You said this at a family cookout. Everybody was relaxed. And then there was tension. Like, everyone was tense right away. And so my question is like, so like 2012, while a lot of people may not remember now, 2012 was the year the world was supposed to end. And a lot of world ending things were happening during that year. And so, I mean, for you to make that decision, were there other things going on during the time that kind of led you to make that decision?
To try to get out and try to do what I wanted to before the world ended? Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, who cares about student loan debt when the world's not there? 100%. You know, the world was kind of going a little bit crazy, and I needed to find my place in it and who I was going to be. And, you know, it was an election year that year. And growing up, I grew up in the South, so it's all red down there. And, you know, I went to a very blue school. And so my buddy that I rode with, on the trip, Jeff, he's blue through and through most days. And so, you know, being able to bounce things off him and get his perspective and really dive into some of the issues, it was important for me and that growth that happened on that trip for sure. Definitely. But one thing that my dad said, on graduation day, I'll let you.
No, you say it.
Yeah. So I was sitting there and I said, this is what I'm going to do. They asked me one or two questions, you know, how far, where are you going to start, how are you going to get money? And I was trying to just throw out questions. I was just really trying to throw out words in a sentence, really, like no good answers, just like strung together words. And he asked me, he said, are you going to take a gun with you? And, you know, with the Colorado movie shooting, with, I think there were a couple of other shootings in 2011 as well. And just all kinds of robberies and theft was on the rise and all this, you know, all this stuff. I was like, does a gun make sense? And I let it like sit with me for a little while. And I was like, man, that'd be heavy as shit. Like, that was the first thing I thought about. Like, I can't carry that the whole time. And then I got to do ammo. It's in my bag. It's why would I even take that? You know, but so I did like let the idea sit with me for self-defense, but I've never even asked my dad like why he asked me that question.
And so why was the question there?
The question was there because the world's crazy. And, you know, frankly, you see me today, I'm probably packing.
Well, and you know, the thing that's interesting about that is I fully support the Second Amendment. I think people should have the right to own a weapon. I mean, as long as you're not going around shooting people just because, I mean, no. If you're using it for the obvious protection of yourself and your family, it makes sense to me. And it's interesting specifically because I remember I went to see that movie, right? So The Dark Knight with the Joker and all that mm-hmm. stuff, a really fantastic movie. And the fact that there was a guy that went in the movie theater in Colorado, a place that you don't really, well, I guess I wouldn't associate like crime like that, even though I guess when we were young, there was that one shooting in high school. I think Columbine was there. And
Columbine was here. And so, in Colorado now, and it was here.
Yeah. And so the thing that is interesting about it is just imagine, you know, going to the movie to see, which was a pretty good movie. And then you got a guy who wants to be one of the characters in the movie and start shooting at people. So there's a legitimacy in the concern that your dad had of like, hey, man, you're going to ride it. One, you're riding a bike across the country. And then two, people are getting shot up around here in the United States because we don't know what's going on. So and you just went to college and graduated, and now you're not doing what you went to college for. So I can only imagine how that felt. I mean, hey, when I told my mom I was going to leave the country to go do some other things, she looked at me crazy too. So yeah, I can understand to
it's
a
their
degree.
Job, I guess.
Yeah, well,
Here's the thing, right? So if my son now said, Dad, I'm going to ride my bike across America, I'm going to be like, hell yeah, can I come? You know? So it's about I think it's a little bit about the unknown and there's a wall of perspective or I don't know, like we couldn't go to the moon for a little while, right? Now we can go to the moon. And so just breaking barriers, I guess, and just breaking our own personal barriers within our family and you know, what can we do on our own levels?
Absolutely. And Randy, I have a question for you because, I mean, obviously, because generationally, you know, Sean and I are sort of in the same, well, not sort of, we are in the same generation. And so, like, as a dad, like, for instance, in that year, just the man who went on the moon died in 2012. And Sean made it in sort of a comment about that, like, you know, we never even imagined going to the moon. So for you, like, what was your thought? Like, had you heard of anyone riding their bike across the country?
No, no.
Any of those, and I quote unquote, crazy things.
No. I mean, you know, this was, and he had like $8.
Hey, come on now.
I'm going, okay, how you gonna do this? I said, and Sean, I don't know if you remember this saying, me telling you this, but I said, I love you, but you're off the payroll.
Right.
Ready to go. Did I not tell you that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, I had a hardworking minimum wage job that summer, so I was good to go.
Well, it depends on what minimum wage is on your state. If you were in South Carolina, and you were like at the minimum wage.
Minimum.
So, and you know, your dad actually leads to the next question, and I think is valuable to know. And again, your book will tell more about it later. But the planning, right? The planning in this trip, like, was this something that you were like, hey, man, you woke up one day, I'm about to have my college degree, and now I'm just going to ride across the country? Like, what plan? Because clearly you had a plan to do it, because your ride started in Seattle, Washington, not Rock Hill, South Carolina, where Winthrop University is. So there had to be a plan to get you to the other side of the country to then get on a bicycle and say, I'm not going to take the means that I took to get here to come back. So what was
the planning? It's kind of like I cut my safety net, right? That's kind of what that was. It's just cutting my safety net entirely. Like, every pedal stroke was a stroke to get home, right? It was all getting home. There was no starting from home, and, you know, there's no halfway point where it's quicker to finish, you know, and versus just turning around. Yeah, the planning. Jeff was an Eagle Scout in high school, and this is kind of where the very early stages of this started coming together. He was my best friend in high school, and he always did all this hiking, and he wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. And as an Eagle Scout, that's kind of like a badge of honor to hike the AT. And then college comes, and we kind of get into triathlons, and I fall in love with cycling, and I get a job at a bike shop, and I freaking love it. You know, I'm racing all the time and doing triathlons and stuff. And I come up to him one day, and I'm like, hey man, I'll hike the AT with you if you ride your bicycle across America with me. And it's kind of this deal that we've always had. We have yet to fulfill my end of the deal. but it's coming. I promise you it's coming. That's book number two. But the planning, what was okay. And then I just hit the keyboard, right? I said, bike ride across America. That's Google it. Right. And there's a company called American Cycling Association, ACA, and they have these maps that are incredibly detailed. They'll give you the elevation, places to stop, sleep behind this dumpster if you don't want to get caught, kind of like super detailed descriptions on how to successfully ride across America and what roads to take and perfect times of the year, weather pattern, like they're great. And we used that. Jeff wanted to do the West Coast. That was his dream. I always said across America, right? So we've done it both ways, top to bottom and left to right now. So, all right, we went across. So we got this map, American Cycling Association map, started heading down the West Coast, and it became almost burdensome at some point. You know, it's you got to get to this campground, you know, it's 50 miles away. Man, I'm pulling this freaking heavy behind trailer like up these mountains, and it's freaking raining on me. I don't want to go 50 more miles. I'm done. Where do I stop at now? And Jeff is a very linear person, very, you know, I guess it's A-type personality. I'm going to do this X, Y, Z, you know, and right. Just forward thinking like that. I was very much go with the flow at that time. I was like, dude, I don't care about that freaking campground. We'll do that tomorrow. You know, whatever. And so it became a point of contention between us, and the maps actually started to hurt our trip worse than they helped, but it did help us in the planning process of, you know, a place to start, a place to finish, kind of a rough guideline. And, that was just the route. We had hours and hours of conversation on the route. Then we had gear that we talked about. We would not fight, but we would talk about, you know, do I use these? I got my pannier with me that I used. One of them is this crappy old like red bag thing that I had to actually install hardwood in the back of to make it work properly. Or plywood, not hardwood. But we would talk about gear for hours and hours and hours, you know, almost obsessing over, is this the right battery for this specific flashlight? Like everything was down to a T, and it was all balancing that budget too, right? Like, what's the best one I can get for $0?
Right? You had $8, so I understand.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
you have to remember, this is 20-something-year-old kids that literally don't have a pot to pee in that are making this trip. I mean, you think about it in terms of, you look back now, and I look back at what he accomplished, and I go, damn, that's impressive.
And Randy,
I mean, think about it.
and I was going to ask you, because even though he said it to you and you're like, dude, are you crazy? I would guess you know your son enough to say, okay, he did do some planning for this. But even with all the planning, what if he gave you every detail of the plan, would you still have felt comfortable with
no. the decision? No. Why would you? I mean, as a parent, why? Nobody would.
And I tried to justify this thing in every single way I could think of, right? Nothing worked.
And the thing that I think that's really, really interesting is it's funny because this is sort of the parent-child thing, obviously sort of a younger young adult child, where you can have everything planned out and your parent is still like, no. Like they're just trying to hear you. Because they're like, okay, I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate that you took your energy and your focus to plan this thing that I'm going to tell you no to anyways. But
you know, you look at it and you think about it from a 40-year-old, 45-year-old guy at the time in life, you know, 42, whatever I was at the time, and I'm going, my butt wouldn't handle 20 miles, much less 3,000.
5,300.
Yeah.
And so a question there is like, and Randy, so I want to start with you is when he decided to go, what feeling did you have? Like, how did you feel? You're like, all right, Sean is gone. Like, he's gone. What did you feel? Like, obviously Sean said there was some friction. So like, what did you feel about it at that moment when he said, all right, I'm gone though?
Well, from the day that he took off, I worried. You know, and literally prayed. And Carla's over here, and she boo-hooed for hours.
He doesn't know
that. You know, because we were worried about him. What you don't realize is everything that had happened in his life prior to this. I mean, you know, me and Sean's mom went through a nasty divorce, and he had to endure all that. And so he was a complicated young man at this point in his life, and he had things to figure out about himself. Much less becoming a man or me to, you know, and look, when you're 19, 20 years old, did you listen to your mom and daddy? Not a thing, I imagine. We become older. We get in our 30s. They become probably a little smarter than they were. You know, my dad's 85 now and a brilliant man.
Only a little bit more. Only a little bit more every year. And so, Sean, when you took off, because obviously we'll have other episodes to talk about that, but when you took off, what was that feeling? Because, so what did you do? Did you fly across the country? How did you get to Washington State? And then, so what was that feeling when you that bike hit the road, first pedal push?
Oh, okay, so the feeling when I took off, and since Dad's on the show, I'll just say my feeling toward my dad. I'll just direct it toward him. I was livid. I was super pissed at him. And that on graduation day, he asked me, he said, how far do you think you're actually going to make it? And Tom is just banged around in my brain for weeks. And then even after I was done, still for months, I was just pissed. I was like, but honestly, that, how far do you think you're going to make it? In conjunction with a whole lot of curse words is what got me up some of those mountains, especially in the Sierra Nevadas. Like, no kidding. Like, how far do you think I'm going to make it? I'm going to get this far. I'm going to get this far. I was just cursing at him, and I was just a lot of anger. But then there was one moment when Jeff and I, he was kind of a little bit behind me, and it had been a super rough day, a hot, no, little to no water. And we're going through one of these passes and specifically, I think it was Nevada. And I just start slamming and mashing the pedals as hard as I can and letting the pain just set into my thighs and letting that lactic acid just burn up as much as it can. Just wanting my chest to rip open. And I was just like, you son of a bitch, I'm going to make it all the way. Like, all the way. I'm going to make it. I don't care how bad it hurts. I'm going to make it hurt as much as I can right now. And I just slammed myself into every single pedal stroke. I got to the top of the mountain and fell off my bicycle. And I was just, honestly, I was just weeping, to be honest.
So a quick question on that. So how far, and being honest, before your dad asked you that question, how far did you think you would make it? Did you, you figured, yeah, I'm just going to do it all. Did you always have full faith?
I didn't know if I'd make enough money to get the plane ticket.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
But
$8.
Yeah.
And so Randy, a question for you, how far did, so you asked him the question, how far do you think you're going to make?
I love that. I love when people tell me I can't do something.
Yeah. I hear you.
Oh, and so scary part was I knew he would probably make it. I knew the kid. And so I knew he would probably make it. Now, how he would make it and what would be the results of him being, you know, having to go that far and what could happen to him on the way, I wasn't hip. You know, it was like, I get it. I understand it. But this ain't 1700s, you know, when all you got to worry about is a buffalo getting you.
So the rationale behind – The rationale behind the comment, was it sort of an anger thing that you said, sort of to try to discourage him, or did you like, because obviously you had full faith in your son, but like what when you said how
it
far
was, go ahead. Yeah, I mean, we could do that. It was more of a you worry about your son at this point in his life. He's 24, 25. He's just graduated from college. He's got a degree that we bled sweat and all but had to kill him to get, because, you know, that wasn't his dream, just to get a degree. I think he's appreciative of it now, but at the time it was not his dream. And, you know, it was, the paper was there. He could have gone anywhere he wanted and applied, and he would have been a teacher and, you know, had a paid job. And that's what we wanted for him. It's not what he wanted for himself. And that was when you become a man, is when you start doing it for yourself.
And so a thing that I think that's really interesting is, so during 2012, I mean, I alluded to it, I joked a little bit about it, that the world was supposed to end in 2012. But specifically, there were a lot of events that happened in 2012 that were very newsworthy. And so, Randy, I'm actually going to start with you. As those news events happened as he was gone, because he was gone for approximately, 3 months, September to December. And so what was going through your mind every time a news event came up, maybe West Coast or anywhere in the United States? Like, how did you feel?
I mean, what do you feel? You worry. I mean, you know, because I didn't have a way to get a hold of him. It's not like I picked him on him calling. I mean, this was like he was in the 1960s again. You know, if he called me from a payphone or wherever, is when we talked.
Yeah, because I didn't have a phone, right? My phone broke on the West Coast, like Northern California. The humidity in Oregon, just the straight fog.
Yeah,
in conjunction with like the back sweat from, because that's where I kept my phone, is like in that pocket on the back of the jersey. It broke my phone, so I didn't have a phone the whole way, pretty much.
You know, I looked at him from the standpoint, I knew what he had done, and I knew that he could take care of himself. And this guy wasn't, you know, him or Jeff were strong young men. I wasn't worried about them taking care of themselves. I was just worried about something happening to them and us not having a way of even helping. And, you know, Carla was worse than me at the time. She was a wreck every time the news came about.
And so a question, you just mentioned Jeff, and we're going to talk to Jeff at another time. But so Sean tells you, okay, Jeff and I are going to ride our bike across the country. Did you talk to Jeff? Did you say anything to his parents? And so, and Sean, like, what about Jeff and his parents? Like, did you have any interaction with them? So, Randy, I'll have you go first, and then Sean, you can follow up on that.
Yeah, no, I did not. But I knew Jeff. I mean, Jeff had been around since they were kids. I mean, so we knew Jeff, and we knew he was very capable. And, you know, there's several friends that I would have been extremely worried about them, you know, getting into something with. Jeff wasn't one of them. You know, I knew that they would make it back and, you know, not stop off in San Francisco and never come home kind of deal.
We did stop in San Francisco for a week, but.
Well, I mean, I would have probably visited for a week too. Yeah.
And so, Sean, what about you? Like, how did we'll talk to Jeff, but did you talk to his family or anything like that before?
Yeah. You know, I spoke with his mom for sure, and she was super supportive and, you know, obviously worried, you know, but it was good. She was healthily concerned for her son and for my safety. And, you know, I should have had the foresight to, as you just mentioned, to have them talk with each other. I think that that would have been a really good idea.
Well, we don't think about negotiations when we're in our 20s because we've been living a life where we've been told things for so long that we're not thinking about negotiation. We're about, hey, this is what we're going to do, and we just want you to support us, and that's it. But it doesn't really work that way. based on the American Cycling Association, did their path tell you to start in Seattle?
I was probably 15 different routes, at least at the time, that you can take. You know, you can take the first railroad in the middle of the United States. You can take a path kind of going up the East Coast. You can take the northern tier, the southern tier. So what we did is we did three different routes, actually. We did the West Coast. We made it down to San Francisco. That's when we started going north and kind of did the loneliest road through Nevada. And then we booked it south to try to run away from the cold weather that was coming like a flock of birds, and made it down to Mexico, stopped in Mexico for some breakfast tacos, and then used the map guidance to make it on the southern tier to Florida.
And so as far as money, because I mean, obviously we're going to stick with the $8, right? So you had $8. So I'm guessing because you had September, October, and November and December. Well, you spent $2 a month. So we're going to just do the math on how you traveled. So, right? But so what did you do for money?
So I thought I was good after the summer of working. I was like, I got this. No problem. But then the freaking airline fees just racked up. And I'll give you the actual numbers. I made it because shipping a bike, shipping a box full of heavy cycling gear and luggage is not cheap, along with the plane ticket. So we flew JetBlue, which was the cheapest we could find by far. And we made it to Seattle, and I checked my bank account, and I had probably $700 in it. Like, no kidding, probably $700. By the time I made it to San Francisco, I had not $700. It was probably in the realm of about $25 around the San Francisco mark. And so, yeah, like, no kidding. I was at $25. And so I was writing a blog, and I had a little PayPal button on there, and a lot of friends would actually contribute to my trip. Friends, family, and I would always write and try to give them as much information as I could and let them know how it was going. And I always, I think at some point you asked who I was talking to on my trip. I talked to Caitlin, I talked to my parents, and then I talked to everyone who sent me money. And that was pretty much it.
Hey, you should talk
because
to the donors.
I couldn't. Yeah, no kidding. And if it wasn't for them, I definitely wouldn't make it. And then at some point in Arizona, I hit $0. Like, couldn't go another day. Didn't know where food was coming from. And I said, hey, Jeff, I see this like roof cleaning service on Craigslist. I'm going to stay here for a little while. I'm going to clean some roofs, get some money. Like, you can take off, and I'm going to stay here and make some money. And he said, dude, shut up. Let's go. And he said, I got you for as long as you need. Let's just make a home. Like, we started this thing together, and we're going to finish it together. The conversation didn't exactly go like that because there were a lot of tensions between us. And so he was like, fine, you know, at some points, but, ultimately,
the reality of it. Yeah. I mean, the reality of it, they had been what, a month on the road by now? He'd been a month on the road. They probably weren't smelling real good. you know, there's not a lot of showers along the way, and they've been sleeping in an Inu, sometimes in the Lowe's parking lot. So this wasn't an easy trip.
And the thing is, we're going to get into the details of the trip when we talk with Jeff. And you mentioned Caitlin. And so I'd be remiss not to talk about, like, your life. You obviously were a college guy. Most college guys have some sort of relationship going on in their lives. And so for you, the fact that you decided to take this trip across the country meant, in sort of in the layman's mind, either meant you had no relationship or you just ended one, or you were super secure in the relationship. This is one of those three things that was going on. And
I wish it was any of those three.
So right. And so we won't go into the details of that one, because we'll talk about that when we have Caitlin join you in the conversation, because I think that will have a value to deal with the balance. Because like your dad mentioned, just psychologically, the things that that you would be going through to one, make that decision, but two, then to do it, is pretty serious. So I have a few more questions here, but before we get to another segment. So what when you talk to your dad, right? Because I'm specifically focused on him. When the first time you talked to your dad along the trip, what was that conversation like? So I'll have you go first, Sean, and just kind of tell me the feeling of the anticipation of making the phone call. And then Randy, I'll have you follow up about receiving that first contact.
First time I talked to him, it's probably on the West Coast somewhere. And if I could put myself in those shoes again, I would say that I was, you know, a little bit nervous, especially knowing that I was running out of money pretty quick. And I didn't want him to know that. And I didn't want to prove him right in any way. But I was definitely excited. And I wanted to show him that I can do this, and I'm going to. And just, it was maybe a little bit of hope in that, like, can I'm making it this far. Can you be on my team now? You know.
All right. And Randy?
And I'm looking back, I should have been more on his team. But, you know, I'm thinking in terms of long-term macro. You know, I'm looking at it. What is this going to mean to his, you know, it doesn't look good to have a four-month. But now I look back and go, that's probably the greatest 4 months of this kid's life. And I wasn't a part of it, you know. And that, for Sean, I have to say I'm sorry about that. But I can tell you this, I've never been prouder of him when he finished. And it wasn't because he rode a freaking bicycle, because that was just the process. It was the man he had become and who he was wanting to be at that point in his life. It changed. That changed him. And he became more of a grown man. And I think Caitlin will agree. And she supported him, and I love that girl. She's a sweetheart, so he did well. And he's done well ever since, and we're proud as that we can be of
him. And you know, even though, and I get what you're saying, you said you weren't with him, but Sean actually said you were, because those words you said to him were in his head every single day. So he heard you every single day. So you were there as more than you thought you were. So a final question before your final thoughts is, when he finished, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, Randy, so I'll have you go first. When he finished, what was the first feeling you had about Sean? Like, how did you feel about him? And then, Sean, I'll have you follow up about how you felt and how you may have thought your dad felt.
You know, I didn't honestly feel any different about Sean, because I've loved him since the day that we birthed him, you know. But what I did is I saw a change in him that changed our relationship to the better. Because now, instead of, you know, having to coach and that type of thing, he's more of a friend. And he's more of a, you know, he's still my son. And I'll still to this day stand up to any of my kids that I think they're doing wrong. By God, I'm going to tell them. You know, right, wrong, or not, that's what parents do. So, but we're so proud of who he is. I mean, he's a naval officer. He's doing great with his family. And, you know, our journeys are our journeys. And I'm glad that he got to do his.
Awesome. And Sean?
So my, when I finished, I was overwhelmed with emotion. I don't even think I could put it into words what I was feeling, not eloquently anyways. I remember finishing and obviously feeling excited and, you know, pumped and elated that I had accomplished this thing. But more than that, I was feeling a change within in me, a drive. You know, I want more of this challenge. I want to do something harder, you know, because we'd finished that. And within 2-3 months, Jeff and I were already like, what's next, man? Like, what's the next challenge? Like, what are we going to take on? And so that's the biggest change in me that I can definitely say happened. And in regards to my dad, what sort of change, how I felt about him, I felt a lot of forgiveness toward him. A lot of things that happened, you know, during the divorce and things that he said to me before the trip, you know, like, how far do you think you're going to make it? I made it the whole way. Okay, I got to let this get off my back. And so I let go of a lot of that stuff, you know, even probably before I finished, you know, but I ended up working through it.
That's awesome. And so, again, the book is Tour Stories from Besides the White Line. And there will be a Kickstarter that kicks off in March 2021 to support this book. We'll talk more about that as we continue. The next episode that we're going to focus on is about you, Sean, and Caitlin. And just we'll go into a little more with that one. I think that one will sort of add a little more color to it in addition to, you know, the family foundation that we started with. So the podcast is called Voices of My Brothers, Sisters, and People. And I love to have the people who contribute have the final word. It can be about anything we talked about in the episode, or it can be about anything that's on their heart at the moment, because I think it's important that you have a voice and say what you feel. And so with that, I will thank both of you gentlemen. Randy, I thank you for being here. Sean, I thank you for part one of the story, and I'm looking forward to continuing to for the next two parts. So with that, gentlemen, I will give the floor to you. So Randy, I'll actually let you go first, unless Sean, you want to go first. Your choice.
Go ahead, Dad.
All I can say is it's a great book. The story, I lived it with him, and I can tell you that he's an impressive young man. We're so proud of who he is. We've been proud of him since the day he was born with curly blonde hair. You know, he was an exceptional child, and he's turned out to be an exceptional young man who we're very proud of. Love you, buddy, and don't wish you anything but success in this. You know that.
Thanks, Dad. Super heartfelt. I feel you. No, thanks for having me on the show. I'm really looking forward to getting to talk more about the tour, the stories, get to share some stories out of my book with you. Dad, thanks for coming on the show and giving that layer of depth to the story. It's a pretty unique perspective that you have on the situation, and I thank you for talking about it.